So as he said, my name is Becky, and I'm currently a master's student working with Dr. Jim Shoup out at the Pennsylvania Fruit Research and Extension Center in Biglerville, Pennsylvania, which is in southeastern Pennsylvania for the most of you that probably don't know where it is. One of the first steps in the season to producing a really high-quality fruit crop is crop load management. In addition to having short-term impacts, improving size and color and ripening speed of fruit, there are also between-season effects year-to-year of improving tree health, improving spur quality in following seasons, and also decreasing that fluctuation between heavy and light crop loads year-to-year. And in addition to all of that, the earlier in the season that we can optimize our crop load, which usually means removing excess crop load, thinning, the greater the impacts will be both at the end of the season and the following year. Unfortunately, these early season techniques, which I'm considering to be at or before petal fall, are relatively limited, particularly in the East Coast. Excuse me. My project specifically is working with Gala apples. It's the most popularly sold apple variety in the U.S., and it is the second most popularly grown variety in the U.S., meaning that it has a lot of economic importance, not only in the United States as a whole, but also in Pennsylvania specifically. We grow a lot of Gala apples. But it has its own challenges. It has a strong tendency to overbear, which leads to small, poorly colored fruit most years. It's not heavily biennial, but it does tend to overbear pretty reliably, which means that in certain years, depending on economic swings and things like that, there is generally a much higher profit margin for large, well-colored Gala. Off of my trees in 2017, I had apples sized to fit 80 apples in a 41-pound box, and 198 apples in a 41-pound box, which led to a difference of 18 cents per apple, which is quite a bit. And those prices are just based on size. I assumed extra fancy, so I assumed the same color variation for all of them. And these are based on Pennsylvania prices, so depending on where you are in the country, the prices would be different. Artificial spur extinction is a technique, an early season manual thinning technique, which means that we get those early season crop load decrease benefits in terms of maximizing our outcomes, and we also don't have to deal with chemical registrations, and because we do our thinning early in the season, we're not fighting to get through the entire canopy to access the fruit that need to be removed. There's two primary steps to the practice, the first being the actual removal of spurs. We go in, traditionally the practice is done around tight cluster, anywhere between half-inch green and a first pink, and they remove excess buds. The industry standard is 6 buds remaining per centimeter squared of limb cross-sectional area. So we measure each branch at the base of the branch and then determine how many buds should be left on the branch at that level. And that happens around tight cluster, as I said. And the second step of the practice is to come in slightly later when all of the buds on one-year-old wood have opened up and we remove all of them. Both vegetative and fruiting buds are stripped off of one-year-old wood. The technique itself is based on the the 4 different growth types of apples, and it's specifically trying to mimic the type 4 style, which is apple trees that produce apples only on their tip buds normally, and they tend to be very regular bearers, and they produce relatively high quality fruit. The study that looked at the different types of growing habits showed that they do this by aborting all of their spurs, or most of their spurs, on older wood. So the practice was designed based on that. And it's currently widely practiced in New Zealand and Australia, where they've done a lot of really good research looking at the technique on different varieties and its impacts on young trees and things like that. And they had a couple of studies done on Gala that were actually the inspiration for my project. Some research on artificial spur extinction has been done in Pennsylvania, but it's primarily focused on implementation methods. So traditional ASE is what I described beforehand, and then they conducted an estimated version similar to how when you thin apples, you'll do one apple every 8 inches or so. They did that with the spurs. And then the third technique was to do a mechanical spur removal using a string thinner. And the general conclusions of the study were that none of the techniques really lowered crop load to the point where they could see a noticeable increase in fruit size and quality at the end of the season, which led us to the question of, is there a level of spur removal that would lead to improvements in fruit size and quality in Pennsylvania climates in our growing systems? we changed a couple of things about the practice to make it more feasible for our industry in Pennsylvania, the first being that we do our bud removal during dormancy, which you can see in that picture on the upper right. There's less to get through in the canopy, and also it's a time when labor resources may be more available. So that's in early to mid-March. And then the second thing is that many of the growers in New Zealand use a follow-up hand thinning where they come in and they thin all of those clusters down to single or double fruits. And we don't do that because, generally speaking, people in Pennsylvania are not going to hand thin Gala. It's very costly. So the treatment levels that we used are shown in the bottom right there. We had 2, 4, and 6 buds per centimeter squared of limb cross-sectional area, and you can also see those here. And then in addition to that, we had 2 controls based on the second step of artificial spur extinction, which included a completely unthinned treatment known from here on out as Control B, and a treatment that had no spurs removed but did have the lateral blossoms removed, and that's known as Control A. We started out in the season looking at our fruit set, and we did it as a this shows here the fruit set per 100 blossom clusters along the y-axis, and then along the x-axis you can see the different treatments, and they're organized based on the number of clusters they had at the beginning of the season. From left to right, they increase. And you can see, as we would kind of expect, is a general negative trend to the data, and it explains 36% of the variation, which is not great, but it's good for biological data. The other thing that we looked at, in addition to looking at overall fruit set, was the frequency of fruit set. We looked at how many of them were setting 1 fruit per cluster versus how many of them were setting 6 fruit per cluster, because generally speaking, the fewer fruit you have per cluster, the higher quality the fruit is going to be at the end of the season. And while we expected the trees that were thinned to have a much higher proportion of those fruit being set multiple to a cluster, we didn't actually see that. The relationship is almost identical across the treatments to just the total number of fruit per cluster. At harvest time, we looked at the number of fruit quality metrics. 2 of the primary ones that we looked at were blush coverage and starch remaining in a cross-section of the apple, and both of these were analyzed using digital image analysis. to get an exact percentage instead of having to do an estimate or a rating scale. And we found that neither blush coverage nor starch conversion was related to treatment at all, which was really interesting. And I believe that this might be caused by the fact that the way our trees are grown and the fact that last year we didn't have an excessive amount of vegetative growth led to there being really good light penetration through the canopy. And I know that because I took a bunch of light measurements and there was no differences in any of my treatments. And I think that we weren't able to increase the amount of light, and therefore we didn't see the increase in blush and starch that we may have otherwise. Also at harvest time, we measured soluble solids, and we measured the proportional distribution of fruit size. So on the left there, you can see not only that there was a general negative trend with crop load for sugar content, which is to be expected. But one thing that I did want to point out is that all of this data was analyzed both as regression, and then we also did a certain amount of it analyzed as an ANOVA, because the goal of the project is to be able to give growers a threshold at which they can go out and do their treatment and get the results they want. And 4 buds per centimeter squared of limb cross-sectional area was the only treatment that outcompeted both of the controls. And you can also see on the right there that we did have a significant shift from the control to the thinned treatments towards larger sizes of fruit, which is why the line shifts to the right. Unfortunately, these increases in fruit size, the proportional increase, didn't result in increased potential income for the grower. I took all of my yield distributions and I converted them into an economic analysis using data from Pennsylvania packing houses, and found that there is no difference, and that's largely due to the variation, which is why I displayed the data like this, so you can see that the spread is drastic. and as you can see by the R-squared value, it really didn't explain. The relationship is non-existent, basically. This year, 2018, has already shown very different data than what we saw in 2017, so this is our second year of data. And the graph on the left here, you can see, shows exactly what we would expect to see. We removed lateral blooms, and we removed spur vegetation, and we got more light in the canopy, which is why the ASE2 and ASE4 have higher light in the canopy than the controls do. And it can explain 48% of the data. On the left, you can see that our ASE2 set significantly fewer fruit per 100 blossom clusters than our controls did, and that is kind of the opposite of what we would expect to see given competition within the tree and given what we saw in 2017. This is likely due to some of our environmental impacts that we had. In 2017, we had a late season frost that may have impacted our within cluster competition but didn't drastically lower our crop load. But in 2018, we had a rather terrible hailstorm that came through right after petal fall and caused a lot of damage to the trees and caused an increase in vegetative growth. And then after the hailstorm, we had carbon deficits for about 2 months, which led to a very heavy June drop, and a lot of the crop load in the trees was dramatically lowered. So as we move forward, there was obviously a lot of variability in the first year, which I pointed out. And we did see increases in fruit size and sugar content, but it will be very interesting to see how those things turn out this year. If we had impacts on spur quality from our thinning last year, we might see a more dramatic difference at harvest time this year and more reliable quality spur to spur, so less variation potentially, which would be really nice. We're also going to continue, and do all of the harvest data that we did last year, but we're all going to add to that acid and tannin content in the apples, because we have a cider maker on our farm who pointed out that cider makers would be very interested in that slight increase in sugar, even though Gala is not a standard cider apple variety. Yes. So thank you so much for letting me speak. I really appreciate it. And I'd like to thank the State Horticultural Association of Pennsylvania for funding my project, and my advisor, Jim Shoup, and all of the staff at the Fruit Research and Extension Center. Thank you.
Time for some questions.
Yeah.
Yes, it?
Quick question, yeah. Did you have any mineral analysis in the
I did. So this is half of my experiment. The other half of my experiment was a spur leaf removal experiment. And I haven't gotten to do much of the mineral analysis. I looked at some of it, but I wanted to look more at the proportional stuff. The ratios, because I know with a lot of the bitter pit stuff, you've looked at the ratios more than the just total amounts. Thus far, it really doesn't look like there's much of a difference in terms of crop load or in terms of spur leaf removal, which is surprising.
There's a question, yeah?
Yeah, were these treatments applied to the same trees for consecutive
years? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Steve?
And could that potentially impact, you know, the observed response with fruit set from year to year?
It could, definitely. The one thing I will say is that when I was doing my spur removals this year, they were very similar to last year. So I think that in terms of the number of spurs that the tree seemed to form, it really didn't change much year to year, but it could impact the competition within spurs.
Steve?
That
economic
analysis that you did, that just crop value, did you take into account the amount of time it takes?
No, so that's just crop value, that's total value. I did time all of my treatments this year. And I need to look at the way that I did it was with a ladder by myself, which is obviously not the most efficient way to do it. So a grower would use a platform and go out there and do it in a different way. But what I can tell you is that the different extreme levels, they all took roughly the same amount of time. Now in terms of comparing that to my control B, which required no additional time in the field, it would be a distinct difference, yes.
So I have a question. Do you get sunburn in Pennsylvania? Apples.
Not on my apples.
What are the findings? If you're encouraging tip-bearing apples, surely you're getting more sunburn in Australia.
In another climate you would, but we actually haven't seen any in our variety, in our apples from last year, and hopefully not from this year as well.
Okay. Any more questions? Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.